good afternoon, everybody. It's wonderful to see people who are still interested in the issues of Vietnam 50 years later or 40 years later, however we want to talk about it. I would just suggest that as we go through our presentations, it might be good for people to kind of think about the parallels between yesteryear in Southeast Asia and today, Iraq, Afghanistan, Syria, Libya, and untold number of other countries. It's important. We would hope that we would all have learned the lessons from Vietnam. So I'd like to start, as I usually do, by showing a picture of Vietnam before the use of hundreds of thousands of bombs and chemical defoliants. The only personal relationship, financial relationships, or relationships that I have, as Bob just noticed, are with Vietnam Veterans Against the War, Veterans for Peace. And I was court-martialed by the United States Navy for activities that I took, and I have to admit that my activities were not that particularly original. I did get ideas from what the United States, in fact, was doing in Vietnam, and I thought, well, if the United States, in fact, could drop flyers over the hamlets in South Vietnam, urging the Vietnamese to go into these kind of protected areas from which they might be safe from some of the bombing, then I could, in fact, in this country, drop flyers on military bases, urging people to come to a demonstration against our involvement in Vietnam, urging people to come and march for peace instead of for war. So that was my idea. I got it from the United States Air Force. Hopefully, it was a little bit more positive than what the United States did in Vietnam. I would like to take us back at this point in time to 1945. This is a picture of a U.S. Merchant marine ship that in fact was used right after World War II by the United States to bring French troops into Vietnam. So our involvement in fact in Vietnam goes way back before the Gulf of Tonkin and before the invasion by the Marines. From 1941 to 45, the Ho Chi Minh and Vietnam, in fact, were allies of the United States against Japan. There were some changes of government in 1945 between Japan, Vichy France, Great Britain, which was, in fact, in control of Saigon, and were driven out. So there's a history of thousands of years of struggle in Vietnam to become an independent country. It didn't just start with the war between the United States and Vietnam. As we know, in 1954, Dien Bien Phu, the French, were defeated. Dien Bien Phu is a little bit north from Hanoi. It was where the French made their last stand. During this time, 1950, President Truman approved $40 million in military aid to go to the French. We sent in advisors, and there was kind of ground being held at the 17th parallel. As we know, the French were defeated in 1954. There were Geneva Accords originally were supposed to deal with the issues of North and South Korea, but ended up dealing with three major issues about Vietnam. One was the agreement that there would be elections. The second was that the country, in fact, would have this division along the 17th parallel until after the election, and that this, in fact, would be held by 1956. I just would like to mention a quote from Vice President Nixon, who said that the United States might soon have to send in forces as the Vietnamese were unable to either conduct a war or govern. And I would say his inaccuracies go back to the 1950s. The problem is that he became much more active against Vietnam and against the Vietnamese as the years went on. just a quick slide that I know Carol Baraldi and Jean Grassman will also show you, which is an indication of where the U.S. military had bases and the issue with the bases from which the spraying missions occurred is that there were barrels and barrels that were in fact stored under the ground that flying the C-123s over Vietnam was one way that the chemical defoliants were being used. And I'd like to quickly mention the C-123s, when they were brought back to the United States and they were cleaned several years later after the cessation of the war, the military guys that cleaned the C-123s, studies showed that they ended up with the same types of illnesses and diseases as those military folks that had boots on the ground during the war from 1961 to 1971. The U.S. later, in great wisdom, destroyed the C-123s, so we can't go back and do some more studies, but these were epidemiological studies that correlated the cleaning of those planes with the development of those diseases. Just to give you an idea of what the land looked like, that the spraying didn't occur just from planes, it also occurred by guys on the ground that were spraying it from backpacks, from hoses, as you see there. They had intimate contact with the Agent Orange dioxin. The barrels that contained the chemicals were used as barbecue pits and as showers. This is what the land looks like after the spraying, and Dr. Grassman will be talking to you about the various chemicals that were used during the war. This is the USS Maddox, 1964, in the Gulf of Tonkin. It, along with several other boats from the United States, was being used for surveillance activities. And this is 1961. This is before we have any approval by Congress to say, yes, we are going to be getting involved in this event, in this issue, in this war in Southeast Asia. So 1964, we had boats in the Gulf of Tonkin. August 2nd, one of the boats, the USS Maddox, was attacked by North Vietnamese gunboats that then receded. This was in retaliation for the constant surveillance that the U.S. was doing over the northern part of Vietnam. On August 4th, there was what has come to be known as the ghost of Tonkin. There was an allegation, in fact, that the boat was attacked again. It's later been proven it was not. And what I would suggest when we talk about the ghosts of Tonkin, that in fact that's what ended up happening in Vietnam during the war and during the conflict, is that what the United States saw constantly were ghosts of enemy. And when they went into the jungles and when they went into the areas where they were fighting, there wasn't anybody there. This map will give you an idea of where some of the major battles were in Vietnam, as well as the military bases. You can see the different points in time. It's fascinating to me to look at it because where, in fact, and what was the military strategy that was being used by the United States in Vietnam? You'll see in the Central Highlands that there was conflict in 66 and 72 and 75. There is nothing that kind of stays and says, yes, we are taking over this parcel of land and then we're going to continue moving up. This is 1961, but even before that, we had troops on the ground. I wanted to show this picture of the helicopter and the troops. These were our military advisors. This is 61. We were starting to do our search and destroy, our kill anything that moves project, and that's how we trained the South Vietnamese. I really should mention to you this picture of the troops landing in 1965 after President Johnson's going to Congress to be able to get approval to use conventional military force in Vietnam. It's a staged picture, and if you look closely at it, you can kind of see it. It was used to get people to say, yes, this is what we need to do. This is our fighting force. It represents 3,000 Marines landing in Da Nang, and we already had 10,000 troops there. It's kind of a misunderstanding and a deliberate lie about how many troops we had and when we had them. This is the B-52 bombers that were initiated as a result of Tonkin Gulf. B-52 bombers, it was known as Rolling Thunder, and it was Rolling Thunder because as the planes went over North Vietnam, you could hear them coming. I've spoken with a friend from North Vietnam who said they were concerned when it was a clear day because they knew they could expect the bombers from the United States. We went over and over and over the territory in North Vietnam. In 1968, President Johnson signed an executive order to approve the use of napalm in Vietnam. And I would just like to quickly mention to you, napalm, in fact, was developed by the United States in 1942. It was used extensively in the European theater and in Tokyo, where when it was used, it decimated the city of Tokyo and massacred over 87,000 people. We knew that it was a very effective war implement, and it's been described as, for Tokyo, as the worst disaster of war. But here we are in Vietnam. In 1966 was the search and destroy. The gunners from the helicopters flew very low. They killed anything that moved. And you can see the perspective of the troops, perspective of the people on the ground. Iron Triangle, 1967. This became an important area for the United States to go into. If you look at the apex, it's about 25 miles north of Saigon. The assumption by the United States military was that the North Vietnamese and the National Liberation Front Army, in fact, had their central headquarters in the Iron Triangle. When the U.S. troops went in, despite all the military intelligence, they couldn't find it. 67, the troop level went up to 463,000. At this point, 1967, 1 million troops have rotated through Vietnam. What continued to go on in 1967 was the North Vietnamese, the National Liberation Front, attacking different U.S. troops at different spots in Vietnam. Even the Pentagon Papers, a couple of years after 1967, 69, 70, admitted that, in fact, this was an indigenous movement and it wasn't just all created by China, Soviet Union, and North Vietnamese. 1968, there was My Lai. And I bring up this picture to say this was not an isolated incident. This, in fact, this type of occurrence happened time and time again in Vietnam, that it is an example of what can happen when you identify the, quote, enemy as the other, as somebody who looks a little different from you, then you can go in and you can mutilate and you can massacre. 1968. The extraordinary event that also happened in 1968 in the middle of the My Lai massacre was a helicopter pilot by the name of Hugh Thompson, who came in during the massacre and pointed the guns from the helicopter at the U.S. troops on the ground and said, "You stop or we will shoot." It stopped the massacre. Hugh Thompson then went back to headquarters and reported what was going on, but the reports never went higher up in the command. Some of us here may remember Hamburger Hill, 1969. This was a hill in the Asha Valley, about 700 feet high. The U.S. troops were ordered to take it against the North Vietnamese. They lost over 50 lives, 400 wounded. By the time they captured the hill, they were then ordered to evacuate. The North Vietnamese then came in and took over the property. This went on time and time again. 1968, there still is major activity going on in Vietnam, and in 1969, there was Operation Dewey Canyon, the Marines' last major operation, but it was also the beginning of reducing the number of troops in Vietnam. It's what was called Vietnamization instead of Americanization. And I would suggest that that's exactly what President Obama is talking about today when we're talking about Afghanistan and Iraq. Again, President Nixon, and I'll quickly go through these, used the bombings by the B-52s to be able to get the North Vietnamese to the peace table and to negotiate. The picture on the left-hand side is his famous visit with to China, the visit with President Brezhnev. On the right-hand side, the identification by both Nixon and Kissinger that if they could isolate Vietnam from their supporters, that in fact they would have a better time of having victory. And in the right-hand corner is a photo from Quang Tri province that was one of the most heavily bombed and heavily invaded provinces in Vietnam because it was so close to the demilitarized zone. And just in case anybody thinks the United States bombing of the hospital in Afghanistan was a one-time incident, remember Bach Mai Hospital in Hanoi. 1972, it was part of the U.S. Christmas bombings. The signing of the peace accords in 73, and you can see that famous picture of the U.S. final evacuation, April 30th, 1975, from Saigon, and how we got out. Lasting legacy of war. Similar to the United States troops, there is a Vietnamese soldier who stepped on a landmine. The man in the middle was a patient at Oakville Naval Hospital who had served in the military. And the children on the right you will hear about, long after the ending of the war and the cessation of hostilities, stepped on landmines, picked up a scrap metal, and were badly injured. Monsanto continues to be a nightmare over Vietnam and a reminder to everybody, I will stop. I just wanted to show you what continues in the name of the United States and the multinational corporations in Southeast Asia. Monsanto is there, and in fact, they have contracts with the government for the genetically modified organisms and the use of Roundup, that wonderful pesticide. This is a shot from Al Louis, shows you the remaining legacy of the conflict in Vietnam. The bomb craters remain, they breed mosquitoes and disease. This child is 30 years old. He lives with his mom in the north of Vietnam. Dad went south to fight, came back, and the child was born. They live in one room with barely any electricity that basically comes from the next door. Healing the wounds of war. There is a group of us, Vietnam Agent Orange Relief Responsibility Campaign, and we are working on healing the wounds of war and bringing together the children who have been impacted. Heather Bowser's dad served in the military in Vietnam. She was born with the same types of birth defects as a young man on the right. Our reconciliation, and this is what Da Nang looks like today, peaceful scenery in place of the United States Marine Base. Thank you. Sorry, Bob.